You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
For the fourth time in five seasons, the Rockets go home on a familiar feeling, losing to the Golden State Warriors in the playoffs. Welcome in to a season-ending wrap-up edition of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Saturday morning, the Rockets season for 2018-2019, it's officially in the books. That's because they lost a home game 6, 118-113 to the Warriors on Friday night. A rough loss that the Rockets led by 7 early in the fourth quarter, but an explosion from Steph Curry, scoreless in the first half, but 23, a playoff career high in the fourth quarter as the Warriors made so many key shots down the stretch. James Harden and Chris Paul each played very well. Harden, 35 points, 8 boards. CP3, 27 points, 11 boards. Between the two of them, 62 points, 19 boards, 11 assists. I would say by far the best playoff game from Chris Paul of all in an elimination setting. Unfortunately, the Rockets, they let go of opportunities earlier in the series. They missed opportunities earlier in Game 6. And when it came down to the wire, kudos to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson for making some really tough shots. Between the two of them, Steph and Klay, 60 points on better than 45% shooting from three. They nearly matched the offensive output from Harden and CP3. So for all the things that we'll go into in this show and the days ahead about correctable problems from the Rockets side, let's give credit to the Warriors. Even without Kevin Durant, the four-person core, Curry, Klay, Draymond, Andre Iguodala, this is the grouping that won 73 games. This is an all-time great team that has won two consecutive NBA titles, three of the past four. The only one that didn't lost in Game 7 of the NBA Finals to LeBron's Cavs. This is an all-time great team. Tip your hat. This is not meant to provide an excuse for the Rockets, who have plenty of their own issues, and we'll get into those shortly. I just want to say off the top, great series to Golden State. They played extremely well, and they deserve credit for winning. I also thought they were pretty gracious winners after the game. Steve Kerr, Klay Thompson pointed out how close the series was, how much they respected Houston, saying the Rockets were one of the toughest teams that they had faced in this five-year run, that the margin of error was so slim that it easily could have gone the other way. This was a tight series, and rather than Houston losing it, it was more down the stretch of the game that Golden State won it. And even without Kevin Durant, you've got all-stars, Hall of Famers out there led by Steph Curry. So I know there are a lot of things from the Houston side of the fence that you want to focus on, and understandably so. The Rockets need to be better, and now they head into what should be a very long and eventful offseason as they try and map out how to be better in 2020. But I do want to say off the start that the Warriors were great, and let's give them some credit for that. Now, as far as today's show, we're not going to spend the entire three segments of our usual 3 points recap discussing just Game 6. That's what we normally do, but with this loss being the end of a season, other than some general talking points, there's no real need to dwell on what happened because there's no predictive value to be taken from it. It's not like, how do you adjust to this game and build? No, it's over. The next time the Rockets will play a competitive game will be in October. So we're going to look at this largely through the prism of what it tells us about the offseason, what the priorities are for the Rockets in the months ahead, and we'll do that in the second and third segments. Here off the top, this is the one 10-minute span or so that I'll look at Game 6, and the biggest misnomer that I've seen scrolling through social media since last night is a focus on the fourth quarter of the game, because in my opinion, the Rockets lost the game in the first three quarters. The fourth, when Golden State outscored Houston 36-26, was more a matter of the Warriors winning it. The Rockets' offense was fine, but Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, even against the likes of P.J. Tucker playing dialed-in defense, knowing their season was on the line, simply made some incredible shots. The problem for the Rockets in this game, they never got more than a 7-point lead, even though the Warriors without KD, they had to play guys off the bench that were not accomplished at all. Quinn Cook, Alphonso McKinney, Jordan Bell, Jonas Jerebko, The Rockets had so many opportunities. They never led by more than seven. And then when they did lead by seven, that was early in the fourth, the sequence that I thought really set the stage, the worst of the game, and it set the stage for the finish. They had a 3-on-1 fast break with a 7-point lead, could have gone up 9 or 10. Tucker didn't pull the trigger. I don't think he quite liked his footwork, so he passed it to Gerald Green, who took an awkward 5-foot runner instead of swinging it to Eric Gordon, missed it. The Warriors hit a transition three to cut it to 4. Should have been a 9 or 10 point lead in which you finally got some real separation, would have been the biggest lead of the game. Instead, it's 4, and then the starters check back in for the final 10 minutes. It was anybody's ball game, and Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, 2 all-stars in the case of Curry, a multiple-time MVP, just had a couple more plays in them, and you tip your cap. For the Rockets, the problem was that they never built the lead in the early going. Even when Curry did not score in the first half, the score was only tied at the break because the Rockets had given up 57 points to Warriors not named Steph Curry. And of course, Klay Thompson made some tough shots, but that only accounted for about 20 of them. That's nearly 40 points between the other guys. The Rockets didn't have enough energy on the glass. For the game, they did out-rebound Golden State by 5, but a lot of that came in the fourth quarter when their desperation kicked in. Early in the game, the Warriors had the advantage, and whereas the Rockets playing at home, it was a really raucous environment. A lot of people without Durant believed that this could be a turning point in the series, and the Rockets did not feed off that energy as well as they needed to. Clint Capella had just 4 defensive rebounds all game. The Warriors got so many second-chance opportunities, and that's what allowed them to hang on. So I know there's a tendency to look in these types of games at what happens at the end, the highlight syndrome, but the reality, the Rockets should not have let this be close. In fact, if they had taken an early lead, I think you probably would have seen Steve Kerr wave the white flag and start getting ready for game 7, as opposed to keeping his starters in if they were trailing by 15 and risking wearing them down in a game that they didn't have to have because they had a home game 7 coming up. Instead, they let Golden State hang around, and we know what happened towards the end. So when I look at folks saying, why was Steph Curry better than James Harden in the fourth quarter? Well, for starters, Harden was not bad. He had 12 points in the fourth quarter, 35 for the game. Beyond that, if you're looking at through the prism of Curry and Harden, look, if your expectation is why didn't Harden score 23 in the fourth quarter like Curry, which would be on pace for a 92-point game, I think that's a little outlandish as far as where you're assigning your blame. And the reality is that if Harden scored 0 points in the first half like Curry did, even if Harden then ended up scoring, 23 in the fourth quarter, then it wouldn't have mattered because the Rockets, by virtue of not having a good enough team, would have been dead and buried most likely in the game. So it's not a matter of some points being more valuable than others. No, the fact that Harden was more consistent throughout the game and didn't have the peak of a 23-point fourth, well, that's the only reason why the Rockets were even afloat and competitive, and the same thing goes for Chris Paul. So don't fall into the trap of being jealous of how can the Warriors step up in the fourth and James Harden and Chris Paul didn't. Well, James Harden and Chris Paul were demonstrably better in the first 3 quarters, and that's the only reason why the Rockets had a slight lead in the fourth quarter to let slip away. So that's why you have to look at the balance of the game, and overall, the stars canceled each other out. Curry and Klay were great, but so were James Harden and Chris Paul. The difference was that even without Kevin Durant, we talked about the Warriors having a shorter bench. Well, it didn't look like it on Friday in Game 6. Kevon Looney had 14 points off the bench. Sean Livingston had 11. That's 2 double-figure scorers. The Rockets had none off of their bench. Iman Shumpert did not score at all. Gerald Green scored just 6 and was largely woeful, 2 of 9. Nene had 2. Austin Rivers was solid with 9 points, but that was about it. The Warriors, on the other hand, yeah, they had 2 double-figure scorers. Also, Andre Iguodala hit 5 threes. Eric Gordon hit just 1. So really, James Harden, Chris Paul against Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, the hot takes will be trying to compare those, but on the balance of the game, all of those were great. What ended up being the difference is that the Warriors supporting cast was just better than Houston's, and it's a theme that we've seen throughout the season. There's a reason why the Rockets only won 53 games and were a number 4 seed, as opposed to the Warriors, who were the top seed and the 2-time defending champions. The Warriors just have a better roster. So I think a lot of the flaws, the tendency, especially amongst fans that don't really follow the journey, to look at the fourth quarter and microanalyze a few possessions and try to make them representative. No, the problems with the Rockets, it's not just about the playoffs. They have been there all season long. There's a reason why, unlike a year ago when they were 65-win top-seeded juggernaut, this year's Rockets never got to that level. There were glimpses here or there, but there was never a sustained run where I felt like this was the best team in the NBA. And that's why, while I'm disappointed they lost at home in a game six, I'm honestly not all that surprised. And it also doesn't really feel all that much of a gut punch. Last year did, for example, because game seven, there was no Chris Paul. You had the historic outlier of a shooting stretch. You had all the officiating issues. There were so many things last year where if you flip just one variable that would make that team winners against the Warriors and most likely champions, because the winner of the East was the only series that was left, and that was the Cleveland Cavaliers, who were a 50-win team from a bad East. Even without Chris Paul, the Rockets were going to win the championship if they had beaten Golden State. This year, I didn't necessarily feel that way. Denver and Portland, those are nice teams, but shoot, if you get to the finals, Milwaukee, Toronto, I think those are elite teams. This year's Rockets team, even though they were competitive against Golden State and they had certain matchup advantages that they could exploit because they were tailor-made for these Warriors, it was never quite the same as a year ago, because there was just never a moment where you felt like this Rockets team had that extra gear where they were the league's best. It sucks because the season's over and you always keep hope alive that maybe they can find it. The Rockets' most recent championship team back in 95 won 47 games in the regular season. So it is possible to flip a switch and you always want to keep hope alive. But overall this year, the Rockets team just was not good enough. And I think that's what we saw throughout game six. The Rockets never built up that lead in the early portions of the game because they didn't really have help around James Harden and Chris Paul. Now for the series as a whole, Chris Paul was not good enough. Game six, he absolutely was, with 27 points, 11 boards, 11 of 19 shooting, made 50% of his threes. This was the best playoff CP3 that we've seen yet, but the supporting cast just was not there. The Warriors had a bit more help from their guys surrounding Steph and Klay, and over the balance of 48 minutes, that ended up winning out. So tip your hat, and as far as where the Rockets go from here, we acknowledge that while this series was not perfect, ultimately, it's a reflection of what we already saw and knew over 82 regular season games, which is that this is a nice team, but it's a flawed team. And now it's up to Daryl Morey and the front office to figure out this offseason how they can get back closer to the form they were at a year ago. More on that momentarily as we continue our 3 points recap of Friday's 118-113 season-ending loss to the Warriors. Now we'll talk a bit more about everything that the Rockets can do this offseason, which should be a very eventful one for the franchise in the weeks and months ahead. But for now, I do want to remind you guys that to get this show every day, please subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. All right, now jumping back into the program, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. Today on Saturday, we're breaking down the 118-113 season-ending loss by the Rockets to the two-time defending champion Warriors in Game 6. And in Segment 1, we discussed largely that game. Segments 2 and 3, we'll look forward to the offseason to come and what I expect to be a very eventful one in Houston. So, in terms of what we learned from this game and this series and what it means moving forward, I'll start with the positive. James Harden in the playoffs was really, really good. Now, there are possessions you can nitpick. For example, his frustration turnover on an inbounds in the final couple of minutes of Game 6 was inexcusable. That was a mistake that he needs to be more mature than. But those happen. By and large, his playoff run relative to a year ago when the Rockets pushed the Warriors to the brink, he increased his scoring by more than 3 points per game. He did it on a better than 5% increase on his three-pointers. He averaged more rebounds, more blocks. Every advanced metric, his player efficiency rating, true shooting percentage, box score plus minus, win shares for 48 minutes, they all increased. All the stuff about playoff Harden, this was a really good run for him. Was it perfect? Of course not. It never is, unless you win a ring. And honestly, it's not even then at that point, but at least you have the ring as consolation. By and large, playoff James Harden took a step forward this year, and I thought the same held true in Game 6. Are there little things that you can nitpick? Sure, but 35 points, 8 boards, 5 assists, nearly 45% from the field and 40% from three, that's fine. The five free throws ended up costly in a game the Rockets lost by five. Harden shot just 7 of 12 from the line. That stings. But earlier this series in game three, he hit two free throws in the final 30 seconds to send that game to overtime. If not for that, the Rockets probably lose in game three. And at that point, they're on the verge of getting swept. So for all the stuff about fourth quarter possessions, it totally misses the mark, because you look back to game three, those free throws at the end of the game, those are much more pressure packed than the five Harden missed in game six, most of which came in the first half of the game. It's not pressure. It's not the moment. It's just sometimes you have a bad night. And unfortunately, it came at a horrible time for the Rockets. But if not for Harden, and part of it's at the free throw line, having success earlier in the season, the Rockets aren't even in a game six. So by and large, you have to look at the cumulative numbers, and James took a big step forward this year. Unfortunately, his supporting cast did not, and that's why even though the Rockets had a better James Harden in the 2019 playoffs than in 2018, the overall team results were not the same. And we need to note that even through the context of playing the Warriors, this year's team was not good enough by any objective measure. Now, I know they lose in the second round this year rather than the conference finals because the Rockets were the number four seed and that put them on the Golden State side of the bracket. But even aside from that, even if you just compare the 2019 Warriors series to the 2018, last year's team was closer on a number of levels. And unfortunately, they were closer even with James Harden not being nearly as good. That's what really stings. You know, if you put this version of James Harden into the 2018 series, the Rockets have a really good shot to win it. And you can add that to all your what-ifs, such as Chris Paul's injury. Obviously, the officiating. We went through the leak of the receipts earlier this round. The historic outlier of an 0-for-27 shooting stretch in Game 7. I think you can add Harden's evolution. If you have this version of James Harden in the playoffs last year, then that overcomes, perhaps, some of those other issues. Unfortunately, in this era of the Rockets, timing has never been the thing for Daryl Morey and James Harden, and you can add this to the list. But as far as moving forward, I do think it's progress from James Harden. His numbers went up in the postseason this year, even though all 11 games of his postseason sample were against the Jazz and the Warriors, two really, really elite defenses. As opposed to last year, nearly a third of the sample came in five games against the Timberwolves, who are a pretty bad defense. So Harden got better this year despite playing tougher opponents on average. I think that's encouraging. However, the reason it wasn't enough is because the supporting cast was simply not there. Chris Paul, I think it's kind of silly to say that the Rockets losing to the Warriors without Durant invalidates their thoughts from a year ago that they would have won the series if Chris Paul didn't get hurt. No, every year and every season is different. And the reason the Rockets had so much confidence and still do that the 2018 series would have turned out differently had Chris Paul not gotten hurt, because the 2018 version of Chris Paul was far superior to the 2019 version. So it's not apples to apples in this case. Harden took a step forward, unfortunately CP, and I hope some of it's just an ill-timed shooting slump, but the reality, he just turned 34 years old. At least some of it is probably due to age. He's not the same guy. So even if Harden took a step forward, it was counteracted a bit by CP3 not having the same extra gear that he did a year ago. And then overall, the Rockets defensively were just never the same in this matchup as they were a year ago. I think this is one where not having Trevor Ariza was especially felt. And I think going into the series, the Rockets didn't think that it would turn out that way because they viewed Daniel House over 82 games as someone that had a similar profile to Ariza in terms of his physicality on top of instincts and all those types of things. But the lack of seasoning of House and the fact that in the playoffs he seemed to get rattled as the series moved along, he became unplayable. And that's what had a big deal to do with the eventual outcome and the Rockets not having enough perimeter stoppers. And really, you look at what happened in the fourth quarter of Game 5 and all of Game 6, Steph Curry and the Warriors, even when Curry wasn't all that hot, torched the Rockets. The fourth quarter of Game 5, their offensive rating was 145. That's why all the criticism over should Harden have taken more shots missed the mark. No, the Rockets' offensive rating in the fourth quarter, the final 7 minutes after Harden checked back in, was 130, which is good enough to win you the vast majority of basketball games. That's fantastic. Unfortunately, the Warriors were even better. The Rockets could not get stops. They didn't have the quickness or the length on the perimeter that they did a year ago. And then in game six, Curry got hot down the stretch, but the theme, as I mentioned in segment one, the Rockets did not get separation early in the game. Why didn't they get separation early in the game? Because even when Curry was scoring zero, the Warriors still had 57 points. The defense this year was not the same as a year ago. You can point to individual small samples, such as the final 20 games or so of the season after the All-Star break, where it was. But number one, it's a small sample. And secondly, within the construct of this particular matchup against Golden State, Daniel House was the guy that was supposed to replicate a lot of what Trevor Ariza did a year ago. It didn't end up happening, and because of that, the Rockets felt like they were defenders short. And I think that's another area where they were not the same. Clint Capella, what a woeful series this was for him. Last year against the Warriors, it was mixed. There were games in which he wasn't very good, but there were, at least at home, game five, he had 12 points, 14 boards, a couple of blocks. Game seven, 20 and 9, made 9 of 10 from the field. Whatever reason, he was much better a year ago than he was this year. And a lot of the issues, he just does not look as mobile defensively. I don't know if last offseason he bulked up too much, or perhaps now he's not as young as he used to be. This is year five. I'm not sure what it is, but he is not the same guy, or was not in this series as he was in 2018. And that's why, despite James Harden having a better series and a better playoff run, the team as a whole did not. And it's important to note that in this series, you can what if about a few possessions as far as the end of game five and the end of game six. But the real reason I think that misses the mark, the Rockets were actually closer in this series to losing the two games that they won than winning any of the four that they lost. Think about that. The end of regulation in game three, it was tied in the final 20 seconds. Kevin Durant had a pretty open 17-footer that could have put the Warriors in front. He missed it, and we ended up going to overtime. A few seconds before that, Andre Iguodala hit the corner three to put the Warriors up by two with about 40 seconds left. Game four, the Warriors had really clean looks, both Durant and Curry, in the final 10 seconds to tie that game. And if they had made it and it had gone to overtime, yeah, my money would have been on Golden State because Houston would have been absolutely demoralized. Fortunately, those didn't go in, but those are the two games in this series that Houston won. The games that Houston lost in this series, with the exception of game six and the leads they had were pretty small, generally speaking, Golden State was the better team throughout those games. So that's why I think it really misses the mark to frame this series as one team executed down the stretch and another didn't. No, one team was better over the balance of the series. All the minutes reflected it. I think probably the most telling stat on this series, I haven't looked it up yet, but I know that it would be strongly in Golden State's favor, is how many minutes throughout the series did each team lead. I think it's tilted pretty strongly in favor of Golden State, because they were simply better. And a lot of it had to do, home court was a variable the Rockets had last year that they didn't this year. That's what got them behind the eight ball early, down 0-2 in this series. And then the swing game five, that was out in Oakland. I know they lost a home game six, but that's towards the end of the series. It's one game, and there was some pressure rising at that point. One way the Rockets were able to kind of settle into the series a year ago, they got those first couple of games at home. They split them at 1-1, and it bought them some time. The other issue that it reflects is that it's not just a playoff problem. The Warriors had home court advantage in this series because Houston was not the 65-win juggernaut they were a year ago. On the balance of the season, many of the issues we're talking about in this series, the rebounds, the defense, that's part of why the Rockets got off to that 11-14 start, and a reason why they weren't able to get to the 60-win form over the full 82 games. So while they did find it in smaller samples towards the end of the year, it's another reason why, again, I would not look at this series through the lens of what happened late in one or two given games. No, I would look at it in terms of how it really mirrored the season as a whole, which is defense, rebounding. Those were constant issues. They couldn't get stops or loose balls when they needed them. And overall, for whatever reason, the Rockets just were not as good of a team as the Warriors. They weren't in the series, and they weren't in the regular season. Last year, yeah, they were better than them in the regular season. They won two of the three meetings. They won 65 games as opposed to 58 for the Warriors. And then they were up 3-2 in this playoff series before Chris Paul went out. This year, another thing worth noting, the Rockets never had a lead in this series. Last year, you know, Game 5 was clearly one Golden State wanted. They did not want to be pushed to the brink. This year, the closest Houston got was 2-2, winning the two home games, Game 3 and Game 4, which Golden State, it would have been nice, but it certainly was not essential, obviously now, for them to win this series. So all of those are amongst the many reasons why I wouldn't blow any one possession or game or quarter out of proportion. I think you look at the totality of the evidence, the series, the season as a whole, Golden State was just better. And it's up to Daryl Morey and the front office to figure out how to fix these issues. And before you try and fix the issues, you have to understand, I say this a lot, what the problem actually is if you're going to fix it. And it's not an acute situation in this case of, well, the Rockets had this great team, but then at the worst moment, it all came unglued. No, the problem for the Rockets, they were never this great team. The issues that we have seen throughout the year, they just reared their ugly heads, as often does, under the biggest pressure and playing the best teams, which Golden State definitely is in the playoffs. So it's a frustrating loss. And the reason I mention this, it's not to say that the Rockets have an excuse for losing Game 6. No, it's not that. I want to see the Rockets win a championship. That's the goal. And Daryl Morey, that entire front office, is going to feel like this campaign was a failure. What I'm trying to do is frame it in the right context, which is that if we're going to fix the problem, we need to look at what happened over the balance of the year and what led to this series, as opposed to making one or two smaller things seem as if they're representative of the real problems with this basketball team. The Rockets had a good year, but it was not as good as a year ago. And because of that, I think there are going to be some pretty substantial changes in the offseason. More on that in just a couple of moments in our third and final segment as we finish out today's show. Final thoughts. I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked on Rockets. Today on Saturday, we're recapping the 118-113 loss in Game 6 and trying to spin it forward to what should be an eventual offseason here in Houston. In the first couple of segments, we looked at the game and then the series as a whole, lessons to be had from everything that happened in this series, especially when combined with the season in terms of where the Rockets need to go this offseason. And we'll have more talk about this in the days ahead. Even though the series is over, the Rockets' championship window is not. When you have the reigning MVP of the league, which they do in James Harden, and we spoke in segment two about his growth in the playoffs in 2019 relative to 2018, this is a big offseason. Tillman Fertitta, the owner, said it after the game. It's his job to put the best team on the floor that he can. They're going to be very aggressive. Their priority is winning a championship with James Harden. So this is not it as far as the show. We'll try and get some more perspective in the days ahead about what the Rockets can and will do in the weeks and months ahead as they try and retool this team for the 2019-2020 season, which will begin in October. And beyond just the confines of this one individual series, what I will say is that I think this offseason will be a lot busier than people are giving it credit for. Now, I know the Rockets do not have cap room. Let's be clear about that. The big deals they handed out last offseason to Chris Paul, Clint Capella, also the extension to James Harden, they are well above the salary cap, and there's no way for them to get cap room. That said, Daryl Morey can and will be very active on the trade market. Last offseason, other than Trevor Ariza and Luke Baamute, whose contracts were up, and those were always just kind of key inflection points, and obviously Gerald Green and Chris Paul, their contracts were up too, but the Rockets kept them. Other than players with expiring contracts, the Rockets largely erred on the side of bringing back the band. Because when you were so close as they were, even though it was an older team, when you feel, and I agree with them on this, that you were a Chris Paul hamstring injury away, or a historic outlier of a shooting stretch, the officiating, all the things you can point to, when you are that close to winning a title, and you just went 65-17 over 82 games, even though they didn't win a title, I feel pretty confident that the 2017-2018 Rockets, that's one of the 15 or 20 greatest teams in the history of the NBA. They were really good. So the Rockets, they brought back that group. It's not that Daryl Morey couldn't have made trades It's that he didn't want to. They erred on the side of giving that group one more chance. That's why the hashtag going into the season was run it back. This year, you can't say that. Now, the Rockets are not going to make splash additions via free agency. Now, they will have their taxpayer mid-level exception to spend, but number one, that's not that much, about $5.5 million a year as the starting rate. And beyond that, the three guys they brought in during the year, Austin Rivers, Daniel House, Kenneth Fareed, Rivers in particular, is a guy that if you have any hopes, in my opinion, of retaining him, you'd have to use the taxpayer MLE, because the guys you brought in during the year on one-year contracts, they're not going to be eligible for bird rights. So basically, you have no additional means to retain them relative to a free agent on somebody else's team. So you have to throw Austin Rivers into the same pile as any other potential taxpayer MLE candidates on other squads. So that's why, even though the taxpayer MLE is available, number one, it's not that much. And secondly, I tend to think that the Rockets' priority, especially given his age, would be to lock up Austin Rivers and have a quality backup to Chris Paul, who at 34 years old is definitely not getting any younger. So I think any larger acquisitions will happen via trade. And the good news, it's possible. It's not that the Rockets did not make trades a year ago because none were out there. No, it's because Daryl Morey wanted to err on the side of continuity. Now, I know they lost Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, replaced them with James Ennis and Carmelo Anthony, which neither of those really worked out, but they did get better during the season by adding the aforementioned Rivers and House. Daryl Morey made those moves because he had to. The contracts were up. Other than that, they were comfortable giving that group one more shot. This year, I do not believe that's going to be the case. Because number one, they didn't win 65 games during the season. They won 53. The problems, especially defense and rebounding, over 82 games, we saw them all. Beyond that, the playoffs against the Warriors, as mentioned, this was not a team that came a hamstring away, or whatever other variable you want to frame it as. Over six games, the Warriors were just better. So I think you're going to see a much more aggressive Rockets team going into the offseason, and a GM in Daryl Morey that doesn't feel somewhat boxed in by the notion that he owes it to the team as it is to give them one more look. No, with this case, if you run it back again with this group, it's sort of like banging your head against a wall. They're a good team, and they'll certainly be fun, but as far as expecting the outcome to change against Golden State, I don't know how you can't make tweaks after seeing the regression from 2018 to 2019, especially in the confines of this particular matchup. So what can the Rockets do? The biggest trade chip that they have, in my opinion, is Clint Capela. He signed for the next 4 years, a pretty team-friendly deal, about $16 million a year. And even though he had a bad series against Golden State and their death lineup appears to be a bit of a tough matchup for him, 25-year-old big men that average 17 points and 13 boards per game on better than 60% shooting, those don't grow on trees. He is still a commodity, especially because even if we concede that the Warriors are a bad matchup for him, well, most teams around the league aren't trying to beat the Warriors next year. They're trying to build for 2-3 years from now, and Capela can absolutely be a part of that foundation. So Capela, at his age, he is definitely an asset. Can he get you a star? I don't know about that, but he's definitely a commodity that Daryl Morey can use at his disposal, and perhaps he can get you a star if you combine him with multiple first-round picks. We'll have to see exactly who shakes free and enters the market over the next couple of months. So that's the one guy that to me does jump out, and I could see the Rockets being more open to moving him after this particular series. Because for the Rockets, it is all about the Warriors. This is the team that has defeated you four times in the last 5 years. And if one of your mainstays is a tough matchup against them for whatever reason, even if he's a nice guy, look, he's 25 years old, this is year five, it's hard to see what the path is to fixing this. In the past, he's been so young, you say, well, there's these high points, and then hopefully he gets better because he has gotten better each and every season. This year, he's at the point of his career where players typically are what they are. So while I don't think the Rockets would move him just to move him, for example, the Rockets roster right now, the only other proven guys that got minutes at the five in the playoffs, Nene, who's 36 years old and may retire, and even if he doesn't, he's limited to 15 minutes a game and can't play back-to-backs, and PJ Tucker, who's a 6'6" forward, who's undersized at the center spot and just turned 34 years old. So even if you were to move Capela, you would need to have a solution as far as who plays the five. Maybe there's a five that you think is a better fit in a hypothetical matchup against Golden State. That could be something that the Rockets target. But that is something you have to consider. I do think Isaiah Hartenstein's a good prospect. He had a great year with the Vipers at the G League level, so I think the Rockets want him to play next year, but you're not going to go with a guy who has not played at all at the NBA level, really, and then thrust him into a role where he's starting and playing 30 minutes a night. No, I think you might ticket Hartenstein to be your backup center and play 12 minutes a night to start off, but you're certainly not going to say, this is our five, this is what we're rolling with. That would be crazy. So I do think Capella is an asset. I do think the Rockets are more open to moving him at this point after this series, and I really don't think his value is all that negatively impacted by his rough stretch against the Warriors. I know the consensus amongst a lot of fans that just watched the playoffs is, why would these other teams want him? But in my opinion, the six-game stretch against the Warriors does not outweigh the totality of the evidence that he had a really good season. It's a good contract. He's under club control. He's young. There's lots of reasons why he would be desirable, especially because a lot of teams aren't trying to beat the Warriors in 2020. They're building for 2-3 years from now, and they could see a young guy like Capella being a part of their future. So he is an asset. I do think the Rockets are more open to moving him than before. But as far as any particular deals, the Rockets are going to have to be very wary of the fact that even if he's not a matchup against Golden State, look, they're not the only relevant team in the NBA. For example, Denver's a good young team that's going nowhere. Capella, in my opinion, is the biggest reason why the Rockets have such a matchup advantage there. Capella's also been good against Gobert. He's a big part of, over 82 games, why the Rockets were able to be a top four team in the West. And if you then go with the center spot the way it's constructed now, the other options on the roster, an aging Nene, Isaiah Hartenstein, undersized PJ Tucker, over 82 games, you're not going to put yourself in the position where you get another crack against the Warriors. So while Capella, I do think, is an asset and more available than ever before, the Rockets won't move him just to move him. It has to make sense, and they will need to have a solution at the five if they do that. I think the goal may be try and find a five that's a better fit in terms of the matchup and what the Rockets think they need within the confines of beating Golden State in a best-of-seven playoff series. Beyond that, I think stylistically the Rockets have to look at some things too. I'm not saying that I think Mike D'Antoni is in trouble. It could be that stylistically Mike D'Antoni makes some tweaks and some changes from the way they've attacked the last 2 years. But some of the things that have limited the Rockets in this matchup, for example, not using the mid-range of the floor at all, not saying that they're going to go heavy on that, but perhaps you want James Harden to utilize that area more to put more pressure on Golden State in terms of how you attack? Possibly. Do you want to reduce the isolations? If that's the case, Mike D'Antoni can do it, because really, you look back at Mike D'Antoni throughout his career, he hasn't been that heavy of an isolation guy. The way the Rockets are playing now, the slower pace, the isolations, that's not all on D'Antoni. You go back to his Phoenix days, he was 7 seconds or less. So when I say stylistic changes, I don't mean that you necessarily have to move on for Mike D'Antoni, who, by the way, in his 3 years in Houston, has done a heck of a job, great guy. I'm just saying that if you get boxed in, the Rockets will try to make personnel changes. I mentioned Capella as a good candidate. We'll see what they do with Eric Gordon, who had a pretty good series against Golden State, but Gordon's another guy who, entering the last year of his contract, they had some extension talks last offseason, they didn't work out, and now he expires in 2020. The Rockets don't want to let an asset go for nothing, so perhaps he's a good trade chip. He's only 30 years old. The Rockets will look at personnel changes first, but they don't have cap room, and if Daryl Morey isn't comfortable that just personnel changes can get them where they need to go, offseason signings, we'll see what's possible. Again, they don't have a lot of resources, but they do the taxpayer MLE. Also, one name I'll throw at you as far as minimum signings, keep an eye on Luke Bamute. I think the relationships between Luke and Houston are good. He barely played this year because of a random knee issue that isn't considered all that chronic. It's not the shoulder. It wouldn't shock me if the Rockets looked at Luke as a minimum candidate, and perhaps that would fix the defensive issues to some degree, getting one of those guys back that you had from your great 2018 team. But as far as going beyond personnel, I do think the Rockets are going to have to look at everything, because again, when you're trying to beat the Warriors and you lose not just in six games, but the fact is you're clearly not as close this year as you were a year ago, everything has to be under the microscope. And if you don't think the personnel changes are enough, or if you're boxed in because of the salary cap, again, the Rockets well over the cap, they went all in on their big three, James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, then you may have to look at doing some different things structurally. Areas of the floor, perhaps less isolation, more faster tempo, And it's not all Mike D'Antoni's fault. Again, D'Antoni, I think, has been a great coach, but sometimes even great coaches. Look at Toronto and Dwayne Casey. Sometimes the situation runs its course, and the team feels that. Now, granted, the Raptors, a couple of months after that, ended up lucking into the Kawhi Leonard trade, and that had as much of an impact on their great season to this point as anything. But regardless, sometimes, even if it's not a coach's fault, teams do move on because they need to try something different. For whatever reason, the mix is not working. I don't think we're there in Houston. All I'm saying is that I think everything is going to be looked at more reasonably. Even if Mike stays, I could see them trying to move on from some of the concepts they've tried the last 2 years and perhaps attacking the Warriors and the rest of the NBA in a bit of a different style. Now, perhaps personnel changes accompany that in terms of if the Rockets can swing some sort of blockbuster trade. I mentioned Capella, Eric Gordon. I think those are trade chips. They have, after this year, all of their first-round picks available in deals. So it's not going to be one thing. There's no silver bullet, in my opinion, to fix it. But my assessment going into the offseason, Daryl Morey is going to be aggressive. It's not that they couldn't make trades a year ago. It's that they didn't. It's that other than replacing the forwards, Ariza and Bamute out, and Ennis and Carmelo in, generally they erred on the side of continuity to give that group that was so unlucky one more shot. This year, it's not going to be that way. They weren't as close. This isn't a group where you just say, well, run it back and we're good to go. No, that's not who Daryl Morey is as a GM. Last year was an exception to the rule. This year, they will be aggressive, I think, personnel-wise. They'll certainly look to see what they can do. They'll be more aggressive. They're always big game hunting. Daryl Morey, that's what he's known for. Tillman Fertitta. By the way, the Rockets avoiding the luxury tax this year at the deadline. There's no repeater tax fears for the duration of the current James Harden and Chris Paul contracts, so there's no real reason that they should be afraid of spending. Now, that's a little thing because the Rockets, they're limited by the confines of the salary cap. Tillman Fertitta's willingness to spend is not the biggest reason why they can't go out and make a marquee addition because they're already capped out. But in terms of would an extra minimum signing or a move during the season put you over the top? Yeah, the Rockets should be more open to that than ever since they avoided the tax this year. So some of it's on Tillman as well, and he said all the right things after Friday's Game 6. James Harden said he knew what the Rockets needed to do. Now, he didn't elaborate on what that was, but the point is the Rockets are not going to be content this year to just run it back and say, if we keep doing this and plugging along, next year could be the year. No, they know they were not as close against the Warriors this year as they were a year ago, and I think all options are on the table, certainly personnel-wise, but also schematically, tactically. I would not rule anything out. I think the odds are Mike D'Antoni's back, but personnel changes, I expect those, and tactical changes. Even if Mike D'Antoni is back, perhaps it's not the same system conceptually as it's been the past couple of years, because whatever's happening, it's not that it's a failure. It's just not good enough to beat the Warriors. And as Chris Paul said upon signing with the Rockets back in 2017, if you're not trying to beat the Warriors, then what are you doing? And I think that's an appropriate spot to end the podcast because, well, at this point, the Rockets have not beaten the Warriors. They've now been kicked out of the postseason for four times in the past 5 years by this same group. So this is not it for me here at Locked On Rockets. We'll have much more in the days ahead. I'll try to get some more content and context outside of just my own views because it's not all about me. I want to pick the brains of a lot of other very smart people about what the Rockets can and might do over the next few months. But for today, this weekend, let's let it breathe. It's a rough finish, and we'll talk more in the days ahead about what the Rockets might can do to try and make sure this does not happen in the spring of 2020. Until our next show, the best place that you can follow me is on Twitter. I'm always on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. You can ask me questions. We can interact. Anything I can do to help your experience. Beyond that, Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. Again, any and all of those ways that you can get in contact with me, and if I can help you out on any level, please don't hesitate to reach out and do so. Also, beyond listening, remember that you can subscribe to the show on the new Himalaya Podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Rockets, and you can get our most recent episode that way as well. Also, a final note, now that the plugs are complete, I thank you so much for listening, for tuning in, this experience, going through these Rockets seasons. I know they have not won a title in this era, but these have been some really great and fun basketball teams, and this experience has been made better for me personally by being able to interact with you guys, obviously through this show, the way we communicate every day, but obviously Twitter, Facebook, all those other platforms, email, interacting with all these diehard Rockets fans. I genuinely appreciate it. I wish it was a better ending, but the Rockets, they know that they have the MVP of the league, a franchise player who is not even 30 years old yet. They're going to keep pushing. They are close. They haven't kicked the door in, but they are knocking on it, and they are aware of what this opportunity is, and that's what makes this show fun. It's not Locked On Knicks, you know. It's not like this team is years away. They are close. They haven't smashed the door in yet, but you can see that even though this year wasn't as close as a year ago, they made the Warriors sweat. I'm proud of the effort. I'm proud of the way that they turned around the season after starting 11-14, and now we see what they do in the next couple of months as they try and get a better shot for the 2020 season. Again, I do think the window is open. It would help if Durant leaves. Now, I know the Rockets lost to the Warriors without Durant on Friday, but certainly over the balance of 82 games, I think not having Kevin Durant is definitely a net negative impact. Also, keep in mind, Steph Curry's 31. We started seeing Chris Paul this year at 33, some major declines. So maybe the same happens with Steph in the next couple of years. So I do think, certainly keep an eye on the rest of the NBA playoffs. I think if the Warriors lose, more likely the NBA Finals, I kind of doubt they lose to the Nuggets or the Blazers, but if they fall to the Bucks or the Toronto Raptors, then I do think that makes it easier for Kevin Durant to leave. And if that's the case, then the Rockets window is open because James Harden, what the Rockets showed you this year is that they can compete at a high level even without an elite Chris Paul. They had an elite Chris Paul in Game 6, the final loss of the year. They did not on the balance of the season. And yet the Rockets were still very competitive and at times playing at a borderline elite level. So when you have James Harden in this NBA, you have a chance. And in a Western Conference that has the Warriors and not really any other elite teams, especially if the Warriors lose Kevin Durant, then no, I don't think the Rockets are that far away. They're not there, but they are competitive. So rest of the playoffs, I would love to see the Warriors lose. I think that makes it more likely that KD exits in the offseason. And if that's the case, the Rockets aren't there yet. I think Game 6 proved that. Even without Durant, the Warriors are still the Warriors, but it's all the easier as far as a path and what the Rockets need to do to ultimately get to that level at the top of the Western Conference and hopefully the NBA as well. Anyway, for now, this is where we'll wrap things. Again, we're not going away. We will have more episodes in the days ahead previewing the offseason and all the things that the Rockets might be able to do. One final time, the unhappy box score from Toyota Center on Friday night. Warriors 118, Rockets 113. The season ends for the Rockets with a 4-2 loss in round 2, and now a very interesting offseason begins. Whatever happens in the days, weeks, and months ahead, please keep it locked right here at Locked On Rockets for coverage, as we are the only daily podcast covering everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, thanks for listening, thanks for a great season, and please stay tuned for more episodes in the days ahead.